Welcome, everybody, to this inaugural Wine Scholar Guild podcast. My name's Andrew Jefford. I work as a columnist and writer for Decanter and the World of Fine Wine, and as a study tour guide for the Wine Scholar Guild, as well as an occasional presenter of webinars. And my guest today is Pascaline Lepeltier. Hello, Pascaline.
Hey, hi. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm great.
Perhaps I should explain to listeners that I'm in hot and sweaty France. The Englishman is in France on Bastille Day, and the Frenchwoman is in New York. How's the weather there?
Yeah. Bastille Day under the rain here in New York. Cold Bastille Day.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll think about other things. Tell us a bit about yourself. Where did you grow up, and where's your home in France?
I grew up in France, in fact, as you can probably hear from my very strong accent. And I'm from the Loire. So I grew up in Angers.
Right in the middle.
Absolutely. Right in the middle and just outside of the city between Angers and Savigny for wine lovers around. So 25 years raised in the region before starting to move around for philosophy first and then restaurants. So Paris.
For philosophy first, you say?
Yeah, philosophy was my first commitment in life, was studying philosophy.
As a graduate student or as a researcher?
I did a master in philosophy.
Okay. And then what took you into wine and sommellerie?
An amazing encounter probably with one of my philosophy teacher and a desire to be a bit more grounded. I was studying philosophy and I was too young to start teaching, so took a break and discovered wine, and here we are today.
Fantastic. And how long have you now worked as a sommelier in New York?
It's been now 8 years in New York. 8 years.
And I believe you just got married.
So, yeah, so thanks. We in fact, we got married 2 years ago, but just the two of us. And so we decided to celebrate the second year anniversary last week in 7 years with family and friends. So Thanks a lot.
Many congratulations from all of us. Okay, now... It's good that we're talking about the Loire already, because you're going to lead a study tour for the Wine Scholar Guild to the Loire before long, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm very, very excited about this trip coming soon. Like, it's in October, so very happy that I am been asked to do so. And I really can't wait, in fact.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's nobody better to do it, because you've known it for so long. Are you going to cover the whole river from Muscadet right the way to the Upper Loire, to Puy-Fumé and Sancerre?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the idea. It's a kind of a short trip, and the region is quite long, in fact, with a lot of nuances and subtleties. So it could take, of course, as you know, years to discover it, but we're going to try to do it in 5 days, starting from Sancerre and going downstream to the Atlantic. So we will finish our trip in the Muscadet and trying to discover the main varietals and the main area of the region, just to give, you know, a tempting glimpse to the students I'm going to take with me to spend more time there.
Yeah, that's a fantastic opportunity, because not only will you discover a whole region, but you'll also do a journey, as it were. You'll start in point A and end up at point B. I always think that's perhaps the most exciting of all. It's like going down the Rhone, very similar. So that'll be a fantastic opportunity for you and the lucky guest to be travelling with you. I mean, you know, on that point, do you think of the Loire as a single region, or do you think of it as actually several different regions which are simply yoked together by the convenience of having a river run through them?
This is a very good question. I think you can see it both ways. there is definitely a connection between all this region, thanks to the river and, you know, the overall style of wine, the higher acid, the more nuanced, a lot of white. And like, there is definitely a point when you think about Loire Valley wines, there is a freshness, there is a brightness that makes this wine very close one to another. Yet as soon as you get into details, indeed the Loire bounding together regions that are very, very different, but for multiple reasons, for historical reason, because they were not belonging for a long time to the same entities, you know, before France got its unity. So you definitely have personalities in the region. And then you have a lot of variation due to climate and soil type. So it's not by chance that there is no real wine big appellation called Loire like you can find in Burgundy or Bordeaux, for example. It's because there is just too much differences between the subregions.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, James Wilson in his book on terroir comes up with a suggestion that actually there ought to be a region called the Kimmeridgian region, which would link Sancerre and Puy-Fumé with the Aube part of Champagne and with the Chablis as well, because the Kimmeridgian limestone is the thing that they all have in common. And of course, they would also have continental climates. Whereas when you get right down to the other end of the river, down to towards the mouth of the river, you're getting a markedly maritime climate. And also you're getting into volcanic soil materials, aren't you?
Absolutely. You very, very well resume two of the most extreme difference between the region. The way that Muscadet is set up and type of wine made by the Nanteria is dramatically different because of what you describe. And it's indeed maybe there is more proximity between Sancerre and Chablis, especially I think something noticeable with very, very old Sancerre made in a kind of an older style. If you're lucky to taste them, there is definitely something very similar to aged Chablis. So it's quite fascinating, in fact, and I think this trip and the way it's been built is going to really help people also to understand how to break down and how to grasp regions that can be seen as complicated because all these grape varieties and all these styles and all these appellations.
Yep, absolutely. And of course, in the middle, you have what's called Le Jardin de la France. I always love that name, the Garden of France. Yes. Things get very kind of rich and warm and lush there, don't they?
Yeah, there's definitely what we call the douceur, you know, a softness, both in climate and pace and the way that, you know, the Loire is lingering, being the last wild river in Europe. There is a peacefulness by the river and, you know, this largeness of the banks gave really a beautiful, soft landscape that allows fantastic agriculture and also a beautiful area for kings and counts and all the aristocracy for a while to take holidays in their castle. There is definitely a beauty there. So
yes, the chateau are something to behold. They're incredible, aren't they? I mean, when you look at some of those chateaux, you think, oh, yes, now I understand why the French Revolution happened. They're so extravagant.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And it's like I often joke with my friends saying, you know what, I grew up next to castles, but like it was every 100 meters you had a castle. And people can't believe that. So it's, but they're also testimony of the terroir, you know, and without this castle and like the quarry and excavating these stones, we probably never had the amazing condition and cave to produce certain wine in the central part of the Loire, like in Vouvray or Mont-Louis or Bourgueil and Chinon. And it's quite amazing to think that maybe there is a link between the style of wine and the architecture of this castle. You know, it's where wine is brought together by economics and aesthetics and pragmatism. You know, I think it's quite amazing to see that over there.
And of course, the complete point of contrast to all those fantastic chateaux is that the maison troglodytique, the cave dwellings that you get in the Central Loire, they're something amazing to behold as well.
Yeah,
people still live in caves, don't they?
There is still people living there. Yeah, we call I call that the hobbit holes of the Loire. But yeah, it's definitely still here, and there is this deep connection with the soil, and it's quite an amazing area where you walk down, especially in like Montlouis-Vouvray, and you see faces popping up off the cliff from this troglodyte. So we will definitely stop by and observe certain of them and really understand what that means to live and to age wine in these caves.
Yeah. I remember when on one visit I had to Vouvray in the Central Loire, I also visited one or two mushroom growers, because there's a lot of mushroom growing goes on in those caves. And they're huge. They're enormous. I remember the workers used to cycle around on bicycles to get from one end to the other. Fantastic sight. Anyway, look, tell us about some of the visits you'll be doing. Let's start up in Sancerre, for example. Who are you going to see up there?
So I'm very excited to start the trip in Sancerre. And we decided to spend the whole day in the Appellation, because Sancerre is kind of one of the famous appellations of the Loire Valley. But at the same time, I think is one of the most misunderstood, because I think few people know how Sancerre can be an extraordinarily diverse area because of all the different soil type and the microclimates of this appellation. So I decided to really do a big focus on three estates that worked a lot today on single vineyards. That is something that people maybe don't know about Sancerre, that you can really think about certain vineyards. Like you may think about Burgundy, you know, with certainly some of them could be considered at the equivalent of Premier and Grand Cru. So we will start in the morning. We were going to visit the Domaine Vacheron in Sancerre itself. And Vacheron has been a great estate leading notably the transformation to certain area in biodynamy. And there we will start our study of single vineyard, as the Vacheron were also one of the first ones to put back single vineyard under the radar. Then we'll go a little bit more to the south to visit an up-and-coming producer that I don't think is famous enough yet in the U.S., the Domaine Pinard, which is also a very historical estate of the Appellation. Buet is a slightly different soil type than Sancerre. We are going to start to talk about silex versus Kimmeridge and Marl, all the question of how much clay and limestone you have in your soil. And with Clément and Florent at the helm, I think Pinard today is really on the top of the Appellation. And they've been working also to put out a lot of single vineyard recently, the Petit Chemarin, the Chêne Marchand. So we'll do a deep dive for that. And the other thing with Pinard is I think they're producing some of the most interesting red wine of the Appellation, which very few also people, I think, understand the potential of Sancerre and for Pinot Noir, but there is a history of Pinot Noir in Sancerre, of course, predating Phylloxera, and there is definitely something to taste and understand with Pinot and Sancerre, and I think Pinard is probably one of the best today to taste and to have an understanding of this part of the Sancerre Appellation. And finally, we will go back a little bit north, and we are going to go to Chavignol to visit Gérard Boulet. And Chavignol, if there is one heart of for the Sauvignon in Sancerre, it has to be Chavignol, because it's where you're going to find probably the most famous slopes and the most famous vineyard, the Cul de Beaujeu, the Mondanais, the Grande Côte. And we are going to really be lucky to be able to compare side by side this extraordinary historical plots of Sauvignon with the work of Gérard and his son Thibault will welcome us. And if you read a little bit the history of Sancerre, it's really where the whole story of Sauvignon and Sancerre studies, really in Chavignol, this little hamlet, and to be able to compare and to taste there will be a real treat with Gérard and Thibault. So that will be a very, very intense day and a deep dive in Sauvignon Blanc.
Fantastic. Okay, and then once you've been up to Sancerre and the Upper Loire, you're then heading downriver to Mont-Louis and to Vouvray.
Yep.
Tell me a bit about Mont-Louis. I always think that's rather an overlooked appellation. It's got terrific potential, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. Tremendous appellation, tremendous energy today, you know. And I think what a couple of very important figures like François Chiden, for example, and did really a big push to be outside of the shadow of Vouvray. You know, historically, Mont-Louis, in fact, originally was inside Vouvray, and then quite early with the appellation system, get out of the mix with the bigger appellation. So Vouvray being on the northern side of the Loire, like on the right bank, and Mont-Louis on the southern part being smaller than Vouvray, had then to struggle for a long time before being really recognized for its value. It's smaller, the soil type is also a little bit different. So that may explain why it's not as famous. But since François Chiden and, of course, Jacques Blot really did a tremendous work 30 years ago, bringing their passion to the appellation, bringing a bunch of young guys to the appellation to really take the lead. Vouvray, for me, today is kind of looking at Mont-Louis saying, oh my God, these guys are really doing the job. So we are gonna go to Mont-Louis and taste with François Chiden, producer I absolutely respect, love, and I think today François has reached a mastery and a maturity that is quite stunning. And so he works also with a lot of different vineyards, so we are going to be able to test nuances of Chenin on these different vineyards. And also, François was one of the first to be able to buy land in Vouvray, or to take, more exactly, to first take over and then farm some land in Vouvray. That was quite a big revolution. So we are going to be able to compare with the same winemaker, Vouvray and Mont-Louis. That is, I think, pretty cool. And also the fact that François is in biodynamy, I think, makes even the wine more transparent. So we'll do that, and we will also see somebody I think is doing some of the best Chenin right now in the Loire, Damien Deleschenot at Grand Stiffen. So Damien is located in Amboise, a bit on the eastern side of Mont-Louis, but he makes Mont-Louis. He has some vines on Mont-Louis-sur-Loire. And Damien is also leading the pack for the recognition of the Côte or Malbec in Amboise. So we are going to taste a lot of red wine there, and especially focus on the Côte that is from an underrated grape in the Loire. Like, nobody knows that there is even Malbec in the Loire, and how that grape, which is here since a very long time, really is making superb wine on this silex limestone soil. That will be the morning, and then study Vouvray in the afternoon. So we pack the week. Go across the river, couple like 20 minutes drive, and then we can't go to Vouvray without visiting Domaine Huette. So we will go and taste probably the most famous estate of the Loire, I would say. Definitely, if someone wants to understand Chenin, they need to go to Huette really focus on their different. The three different vineyards and all the style, and why Vouvray is able to make dry, off dry, late harvest, all the botrytis wine, the trees, the moelleux, and the sparkling wine, and what of a better estate than Huette to understand that. So that would be a pretty awesome visit and we will finish with Vincent Carême, which is also part of the new generation and very important in Vouvray to mentoring a lot of the young producers that Vouvray now is seeing popping up these last years after the, what more we showed. Really, Vincent kind of decided to kind of do the same in Vouvray, so we will finish the day with Vincent Carême.
Fantastic. And then you're heading on to the Kingdom of Cabernet after that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we go still down the river. Climates start to be great for Cabernet. It's a little bit too cold as you go central toward the east. So Cabernet kind of disappeared after like Tours. But between Tours and Saumur, you have really something magical happening with Cabernet on Truffaut. So Cabernet Franc, Truffaut. And here, same thing, we're going to explore three different appellations. We're going to be in Bourgueil with natural wine genius Catherine and Pierre Breton. Then we'll go to Chinon to see Mathieu Baudry. And we will finish in Saumur with Thierry Germain. So we will be very close from one to another. This, in fact, stunningly, yeah, close, the proximity is quite noticeable, yet you get a lot of nuances depending on how far you are from the river and on which type of slopes you are working on. And we are going to see really how Cabernet Franc can be a very nuanced varietal, more than I think people can imagine. Really, really interesting study with a lot of different single vineyard Cabernet Franc to taste.
Mm, fantastic. And of course, Thierry Germain, as it were, walked away from Bordeaux to come up to the Loire and work with Cabernet Franc in the Loire. He actually preferred that, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like the it's very great to mention that indeed, yeah, Bordeaux born and raised and moving to the Loire. Thierry has definitely shaken a lot of things when he arrived, and it's really fascinating to see where he is today. And he definitely brought something to the region. You know, that was for a long time very. I would say that there is a kind of a humility in the region. There is, you know, the way that things are going is very soft and slow in a certain way. There was a lot of traditional way of making wine, and having somebody coming from Bordeaux with all these ideas and all these techniques could have been at the beginning seen like as a threat. But in fact, I think Thierry really today got the best of both worlds, the world he come from and what he understood from the region. And he has such a tremendous respect for the area. And so some of his Cabernet today are definitely on the top of the appellations, and also his white. So we are going to be able to understand in Saumur white and red. So Chenin and Cabernet Franc on this Truffaut soil in the Saumur region.
Great. And then it's on to, well, Savagnières. That's such an interesting appellation, Chenin Blanc, but in a completely sort of different style to the other great Chenin Blanc sites. In the Loire, much more open, much more airy, right up above the river. That'll be pretty exciting.
Yeah. So we from Saumur, in fact, we will go to the black side of Anjou. So we are going to, like, for 2 days, we are really going to explore the whites, the limestone, the Truffaut of the Loire, and then suddenly we enter the kingdom of what you mentioned a bit earlier, the igneous volcanic and metamorphic soil. So suddenly the landscape changed, the soils change. We move from white to black. And it's very, very interesting to see that through the spectrum of Chenin. So we will have tasted some Chenin limestone, Vouvray, Mont-Louis, Saumur. And suddenly we arrived in the schist. So first we'll do a stop in Bonzo, which is a tiny, tiny hamlet by the Layon River to go to the Domaine des Grandes Vignes, which is probably unknown from a lot of people. It's a really great biodynamic estate, doing a lot of different style of wine. So we will be able to understand why Anjou on schist can do all this style of wine due to climate and soil type. So that would explore so rosé and red and all that. But I wanted to stop by with Jean-François Vaillant because I think he's doing today the best bonzo, so a study of botrytis, because the Anjou Noir and Anjou Chenin and Schist has definitely an affinity for botrytis. It's a region of noble rot. So bonzo and Cardochaux, and a bunch of this wine around are still struggling because of problem of higher yield and chaptalization and so on. But thanks to people like Jean-François, you can see the potential of the area for dessert wine. So we're going to see Jean-François and rework the botrytis. And then that will be for the morning. And then going still toward the west, we will do an afternoon in Savennières. So an appellation on the northern side of the Loire. We'll cross the Loire and we'll visit two estates, the Domaine du Clausel with Evelyne de Gessé. And we'll do a little tour in the Roche aux Moines with Domaine aux Moines and Tessa La Roche. So it will be a woman afternoon with two fantastic women winemakers. And in Savennières, which is this historical little appellation, we will really discover the powerful, earthy, intense, tannic expression of the Chenin on these stunning slopes of schist facing the river.
Yeah, nobody will forget being there, that's for sure. It's an amazing place to stand and look. Yeah. And then on you go to Muscadet. I always think with Muscadet that, you know, the key question is, how good can it be? It's a bit like Picpoul de Pinay and one or two white wines in the Rhone Valley. You know, are they little wines? Are they country wines, if you like? Or can they really be fine and noble as well? And some of the domains you're going to, like Guy Bossard, for example, or Jeux Landron, it's a good place to try and answer that question.
Yeah, and it's very good. You're absolutely right mentioning that. I think Muscadet can be the white poor man, as it can be one of the greatest age-worthy whites in the world. And yes, by going to visit Domaine de l'Écu with Fred now taking over Guy, Joe, of course, with Lovetri and Marc-Olivier and his team. I hope the students will understand that there is an amazing potential when Melon is grown the proper way with the right amount of yield and care for vinification. So we will taste indeed delicious, quaffable, springtime, instantime Muscadet that you can call mineral water if you want. They're so bright and fresh. You just want to drink that all day long. And we are also going to explore, thanks to these three estates, salt type, especially with Domaine de l'Écu, because there is different bottling thanks to the soil type. So suddenly you can see how transparent Melon can be. And with Joe and Marc-Olivier, we'll explore the surge that is happening right now over there, which is a cru communaux. So there is a whole work that has been started 15 years ago to define communes with their soil type and asking them to age more the wine and to decrease the yield to show the potential of Muscadet on these different areas. So we will definitely see and taste at Landron and at Pépierre what Muscadet can be capable of thanks to this work with the cru communaux. And hopefully we'll be able to test old Muscadet like right now at the restaurant, I'm still selling some 89 and 1990, and my pleasure is to trick my guests with that and seeing them thinking it's Chablis. I love that. It's my
fantastic, great. Well, I'm sure our guests, the Wine Scholar Guild guests on the study tour, will really enjoy doing that too. You can often learn a lot like that, it's true. Now, you mentioned once or twice natural wine. There's a lot of biodynamic work and a lot of natural wine work going on in the Loire. Mm-hmm. And you're going to some of the key domains, like the Catherine and Pierre Breton's domain. Why do you think, you know, natural wine has become so identified with the Loire? Why did so much of it happen there?
That is, you know, I think it's a question of a certain idea of freedom and an idea of economics. You know, I think what allowed the movement to be very, very strong in the Loire is maybe less pressure in a certain way from the financial parts, like can be difficult in other regions, like Champagne, Bordeaux, and Burgundy. The diversity of grapes, the fact that people could arrive and with new ideas and get land and try, and a certain open-mindedness, you know, because what is quite stunning, especially in the central part of the Loire, I would say between Angers and the eastern side of the Touraine, you know, it's the people leading the pack is an interesting mix of locals and a lot of people from outside. So it's a region that welcome people that may not be from the wine business or may not be from the region and really wanted to try to do something. And that was very early on, like end of the 80s and early 1990s. So I think it's a combination of potential in terms of being able to buy, potential in terms of grape and style you can do, because you can do so many styles of wine. So you can try a different style of wine. And then a real social open-mindedness that welcomed a lot of people to the region.
That makes a lot of sense to me, actually. It's true that it's very hard to be super experimental in a region where the land, you know, is worth a fortune and where every bottle has to cost £60 or £70, whereas happily the Loire isn't in that situation. And so, yeah, people are free to experiment and do what they want. Now, another key question for the Loire, I think, is the whole global warming question. Everywhere I go in the wine world, people are talking about it. Mostly they're rather fearful about it, but I guess the Loire could perhaps be a wine region where people would think they would have something to gain by it. What's your impression and view of that?
It's you know, it's a very tricky question, because what they are indeed look like. I think the problem of global warming, meaning not absolutely being a specialist and just seeing what from the outside, is more a question today of pattern of rain and new problems, new climatic challenges like hail and early frost with like warmer winter. And today I think Loire indeed, in the contrary, sorry, has been quite hit by all these changes. Because winters, the last couple of years, winters has been on the warmer side, led to really dramatic, damaging frost in April, and now it's hail. And I think the question is more about what can we do to that? You know, it's not only just the weather is not getting just warmer; is all the cycle seems to be starting to be extremely difficult to control or to do anything with. So it's just very, very worrisome to see what happened the last years, because we are really talking about in certain area crisis. Like if next year there is not a decent vintage, a lot of estates are going to close, you know, smaller wow. guys, because there is just no crops over the last years. You know, you take Mont-Louis or you take Vouvray, between frost and hail, the last 3-4 years, it's been extraordinarily challenging. Muscadet, same thing this year, and I was in Sauvignon last week. Sauvignon got wiped out 90% by frost, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's a, like, I think it's just way more complex, and I think what we're going to see is how can we do with this problem of frost and hail now happening later in a season when the vine is already very, very pushed and out.
Yeah. No, I wrote a little blog about this not too long ago, that the problem is that bud break is happening earlier and earlier because of the warm winters.
Yeah.
But at the same time, problems with the polar vortex means that very often you're getting these big pockets of freezing air descend down from the polar regions quite a long way into late spring. And of course, that's as this year, it's a catastrophic combination. The takeout from all of that really is that global warming isn't just about warming. It's about lots of other things too. Probably the best way to summarize it is wild weather. And I guess nobody really benefits from wild weather. It's always going to be a problem.
Yeah, I think it's very well put. Wild weather, and especially like for the last year. So I think you're absolutely right in that definition of what's happening.
Yeah. But anyway, look, let's end on a more cheerful note. Now, I'm going to write you a huge check. You're going to be able to buy a vineyard for yourself anywhere in the Loire. So where are you going to choose, Pascaline?
I will choose home. I will go to the schist of the Loire.
Schist. Okay.
Yes, Chenon schist. Yeah.
Fantastic. Lovely.
And you don't need a big check. You need a small check. You know, it's still pretty affordable.
Okay, it's going to save me a bit of money. Where would you need the biggest check, by the way? Somewhere like Sancerre, I guess, because it's so easy to sell. Is that right?
Yeah, I think today the most expensive area are going to be Sancerre, and now it's what's happening with Clos Rougeard. Probably this area too, you know. And probably also some of the best part of Vouvray.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, well, thank you for saving me a bit of money there. And also thank you for talking to us in this inaugural podcast. I hope lots of people listening will be inspired to sign up for your trip and enjoy the Loire with you in your company. Thank you, Pascaline.
Thanks a lot, André. It was great talking with you.